This evening, I'd like to reflect a little upon what it means to cultivate a beginner's mind. And I'd like to tell you a story that I heard from a friend about a young man. This is a true story. So it's about a young man who was unfortunately on his way home from work one day involved in a car accident that was severe enough that he had head injuries that put him into a coma for several days. And after a number of days, he came out of this coma, and when he woke up, he was quite terrified to realize that he didn't remember who he was. Not only did he not remember who he was, but equally, he didn't remember anything at all about his life. Now, you could imagine in that experience, he really felt a great deal of fear and anxiety and was a little bit reassured by the doctors telling him that probably after some time passed and he healed, that his memory would come back to him. But he was even more helped by the number of people who would come to visit him, and especially one elderly woman. He had no idea who any of these people were. One elderly woman who would come to visit him every day in the hospital and spend hours and hours at his bedside, sometimes reading to him, sometimes telling him stories about his life, and sometimes just sitting very quietly with him. And he found himself very comforted by the undemanding presence of this woman, to the degree that he felt that he really could open his heart and really share many of the anxieties and many of the fears that he was going through. And indeed, the doctors were right in their assessment. And after a week or two, his memory did begin to return in pieces. He began to have at first just small pictures of his life, of his past, of his work, of his friends. And in that, as his memory began to come back, he did begin to remember not only who he was, but who everybody else was too. And this very gentle and undemanding older woman who had spent so many, many endless hours sitting by his bedside was, of course, no one other than his mother. And as his memory returned, he was a little shocked to discover that not only did he remember she was his mother, but he remembered every argument they'd ever had. He remembered every dispute they'd gone through in their life. He remembered all the ways in which they'd hassled and harassed each other. And even more surprising, or perhaps more shocking, he also discovered that as his memory returned, he could pick up those arguments right where they left off before he had his accident, and just continue them as if this time in between had never happened. And sometimes those arguments would end with her or him in tears or frustrated or shouting at each other. And on occasion, he would just briefly recall those moments when that history didn't lie between them, and when they could just be together in that very undemanding way. Now, amnesia is not usually recommended as the way to cultivate a beginner's mind. But cultivating a beginner's mind is one of the very crucial and very central pieces in this practice, because it is the beginner's mind that really teaches us how to enter into each moment into each relationship, teaches us how to enter into our life without prejudice, without the veils of history, of image, and of judgment. And it's the beginner's mind that really teaches us how to let go of many of the fears and the resistances and the conflicts that are often the children of holding on to so much history. Cultivating the beginner's mind, it also frees us to begin again in each moment and to learn how to greet every person, every moment, and ourselves in our life with an open-hearted welcome. It teaches us how to see anew. Sometimes it's interesting to take a moment to reflect on how many thoughts, how many ideas, how many plans we have already had in this life. To reflect on the countless conversations that we've engaged in and the number of times that we've replayed them for ourselves. To reflect on the countless number of sights and sounds and smells and touches we've experienced, and the amount of knowledge all of us have accumulated in this life. And we remember so much of it. We carry with us our stories. Sometimes we even kind of hoard them like a treasure. It's so interesting to know that all of the cells in our bodies have replaced themselves a number of times in our lives. You know, like this is not the skin we had 10 years ago. All of our body cells are replacing themselves, are somewhat new. We keep getting new bodies all the time, although it may not feel like that. But the one thing that really has continuity is our memories, our stories. The memories that we carry within us. We carry because they are our lives in a way. The stories we have about ourselves, the stories we have about other people, the stories we have about the world. This is how we think we know it. Sometimes when we reflect upon all of this knowing, it might seem like forgetting would be a kind of blessing. And yet the truth is, we would have yet more thoughts, more sounds, more stories to build and to create. Now, having no story is not necessarily a path of wisdom. But learning how to be free within our stories, about ourselves, about the world, this may very well be a very profound path of wisdom. Within our stories, with all their complexity, all their busyness, all the ways they repeat themselves, within our stories, with all their joys and sorrows, this is really where we are asked to learn how to cultivate the beginner's mind. To really understand that wisdom, it doesn't lie somewhere else. The wisdom doesn't depend upon us somehow forgetting our stories or forgetting our history or in any way transcending our stories. But the wisdom is really found through learning to meet our stories as our teachers. Learning how to use our stories as a very genuine guide to awakening. And what is the wisdom that is found within our stories? Well, on one level, clearly, there's a very practical wisdom we all have learned from our life stories. I mean, we know how to cook a meal. We know how to read a map. We We know how to read a book. You know, we know how to speak to one another. There's a very practical wisdom. But there is also very much a deeper wisdom that is going to be found primarily through our stories. Because what we really do learn from our stories is what it is that leads to happiness and what leads to sorrow. We learn from our stories what leads to separation and alienation and what leads to intimacy and closeness. We learn what leads to peace and calmness and what it is that leads to agitation and restlessness. From all of the mistakes that we make in our lives, all of the times that we stumble, that's actually where we learn how to walk new pathways of well-being. From the times that we get lost, that's when we learn about being present. No one can actually teach us that outside of ourselves. This kind of understanding, this kind of wisdom that is really about happiness, that is really about freedom, we actually can only learn from our stories, from our own experience. It doesn't really matter if we have, you know, read every book in the world filled with prescriptions and formulas of how to be happy, how to be peaceful. Unless we actually have really learned this directly in our lives, then all of that knowing, it's just a strategy. It's just a formula. Often without a great deal of transforming power. To be open and receptive to our stories is really about learning the lessons of freedom. And when we're lost, you know, you've probably experienced it today, times when you get really lost in a story, really lost in a story about the future, about the past, or about another person, or about yourself. We really appreciate when we're lost in our stories how much that sense of the beginner's mind is actually quite denied. We see the ways in which those stories often really bind us to the past, in a way in which we keep repeating the past, and how difficult it is to make new beginnings in our lives when we are so bound to the past. You know, perhaps there's a story we might have about someone that we really dislike or struggle with. You know, maybe they've hurt us or offended us some way in the past. And we sit, don't we? And we replay the event, and we replay the conversation, and we replay the interaction. And each time, it seems, the sense of dislike gets kind of confirmed. And each time we replace the conversation, the image of the other person that we have so much trouble with, it seems to get more and more solid, more and more real. And how difficult it is within that to see that person with new eyes, to see that person with an open heart. And this too, of course, we do to ourselves. Because our stories, you know, they do have that power to be really profound teaching vehicles, to really teach us such deep lessons about freedom and harmony. But we also see the way in which our stories actually carry so many of our fears, so many of our anxieties and insecurities. How much of our stories carry, you know, judgment and opinion and self-consciousness born of the past, of something that's already gone by. And yet we carry it with us from moment to moment. In a way in which we start to think, I know you. You know, we use those words a lot. I know who you are. I know myself. I know who I am. I know this group of people. You know, I know this particular race or this particular identity. It's so often filled with this kind of knowing. I would say, really, that the beginner's mind has its own vocabulary, where each moment, each encounter, each person is greeted with a kind of questioning. A questioning that says, what is this? A questioning of interest, a questioning of inquiry. What is this? You know, there are Zen practices of meditation that work with just this one question, that is all that they do when they sit and they walk, with every thought that comes, with every sound that is heard, with everything that is smelt, with everything that arises in the body, with everything that is seen, there is just brought to that meeting this question of what is this? What is this moment? What is this mind? What is this body? What is this world? What is this person? It's an interesting vocabulary. We can see that the expert's mind, or the mind of knowing, often really has a different kind of vocabulary. And one of the most frequently used words in that mind of knowing is the word again. Again. This thought again. Oh, it's this person again. Oh, it's this sensation again. Oh, it's this feeling again. It's such a powerful word, this word again. So often it carries for us such a very long story that is really saying, I know this. I know this person. I know this mind of mine. I know this thought. I know this conversation. I've been here before. I don't like it, or I do like it. I want more of it. I want less of it. I want it to go away. I'm afraid of it. I'm bored with it. All often held within this word, again. It's a voice of knowing, or at least thinking that we know. Now, what happens when that word again appears? You know, perhaps you've sat with a knee that aches today, or a back that aches today. You know, and you come in and you sit, and that sensation arises, and how quickly the mind says, I know that one. You know, it's that again. Or you sit with a repetitive thought, an obsessive thought, and it arises. You say, yes, it's that old conversation again. What actually happens in that moment of saying, I know this? Often what happens is that we are kind of saying goodbye to a sense of mystery, to a sense of openness or interest. We are often saying goodbye to our willingness to learn from it or to be touched by it. We're often saying goodbye to the beginner's mind. And it's really hard for us then to make a new beginning in that moment, to see that back in a totally new way, as if we've never been here before, to see that person in front of us as if they're totally new for us. Because that word again carries with it the associations and then the strategies and then the reactions of the past. You know, perhaps you've walked out, you have walked out of this hall a number of times today. You know, perhaps there's someone who tends to leave their shoes in the middle of the door. You know, perhaps you go by it and you say, there they are again. There they are again. And then the owner turns up. And they take a little time putting on those shoes. They're holding me up again. You know, they're making me wait again. What an insensitive person they are. Perhaps we wake up this morning and it's hot and we say, oh no, I can't meditate. It's another hot day again. I know what it will be like. Perhaps we sit with a familiar conversation we've had with someone. And we say, how can I get rid of it? How can I make it different? How can I make myself, my world, my mind, different than it is in this moment? Why do we want to make it different? Because we fear that if somehow we could, if we could get rid of this thing we know so well, that somehow then we would be happy. We would be peaceful. We would be calm if only this thing I've seen 1,000 times before would go away. We want often, when we meet these moments, to really have a different landscape, to have a different territory, both outwardly and inwardly. We forget, perhaps, that happiness and peace and freedom is not so much concerned with having a new landscape, but with really having new eyes, with really having an openness of heart that can welcome and can receive, that can listen and be touched by the moments. Now, sometimes this sense of knowing, again, the judgments, the opinions, sometimes all of that arises a little bit out of habit. And sometimes we hold on to our judgments and our opinions very, very tightly indeed, almost as a way of protecting us from harm, as if they offer a kind of security. It's almost as if we can say to ourselves, oh, I know this person, or I know this situation, or I know this feeling. Then we'll know what kind of strategy to use, or how to react. And sometimes that knowing is almost like an expression of fear that doesn't actually really protect us. Instead, it almost binds us to a past that has been hurtful or that has been fearful. It's so interesting that we can see sometimes that sense of really being imprisoned by the past is a very painful place. And yet, at times, it can seem almost more painful and more fearful, the thought of letting go of it, of who we might be, without our judgments, without our opinions, without all of our knowing, that can feel to be almost a more fearful place. It's interesting to really explore, really, how much of this great accumulation of images and knowing and associations we really need in this life. How much is helpful? How much of it really serves us well? And how much of it actually really imprisons us? We start to see that knowing and understanding are not always exactly the same thing. I mean, in our life experience, you know, we do experience hurt. We do at times experience great pain and great suffering, sometimes caused by others, sometimes inflicted upon us, sometimes we inflict it upon ourselves. And if we truly understand the causes of suffering, then of course we don't go out and pretend that that never happened. We do everything that we can not to repeat that repetition of suffering and that repetition of pain. I mean, understanding the relationship between suffering and its cause is one of the most important insights in our lives. And we learn to act on that. But we learn to act on it in a way that it brings discriminating wisdom, not fear. You know, and there's such a difference between discriminating wisdom and fear. I mean, if I walk down the street here and someone mugs me at the bottom of the driveway, you know, it would be a rather foolishness for me to say to myself, oh, that was just an illusion, it doesn't matter. Of course, it causes suffering, it causes hurt. The next time I walk down that street at night, I might take a companion, I might take a flashlight, I'm going to be ready. I don't just pretend that it doesn't happen. But discriminating wisdom is different than fear. Discriminating wisdom is knowing what causes suffering and a dedication to bringing about the end of suffering. And sometimes that means saying no. It means making wise choices. Sometimes it even means avoidance. It's interesting, in Buddhism, one of the four wise efforts is the effort to avoid the unskillful and the unwholesome. The effort to avoid the creation of suffering. One of the analogies, and one of the stories that is often used in this tradition, is the analogy of the raft. And it goes, a man or a woman walking along a road sees a great river. Its close bank is dangerous and frightening. Its far bank is safe. So he or she collects sticks and branches and makes a raft, and paddles across the river and reaches the other shore. Now, suppose that after he or she reaches the other shore, they were to pick up the raft and put it on their head and walk with it on their head wherever they go. Would they be using the raft in the appropriate way? No. A reasonable person will realize that the raft has been useful in crossing the river, but that once they have arrived, it's proper to leave the raft behind and to walk on without it. This is using the raft appropriately. In the same way, all truths should be used to cross over. They should not be held on to once you have arrived. You should let go of even the most profound insight or the most wholesome teaching, all the more so the unwholesome and the unskillful. This is a little bit a metaphor for our life and for our path in this life. In a very real way, our life and our story, all the story that has taken place in our life, is our raft, where we learn, where we understand, and then we let go. Then we release it. We're not required, out of fear, to carry that learning or to carry that story or even the most important insight into the next moment as a kind of security blanket that might protect us. Instead, we can trust our learning. We can trust our insight. And we can let go. And in not holding, we learn to open. We learn to cultivate the beginner's mind. This is not an easy thing for us to do, to be able to have that kind of letting go, that kind of releasing. But it is about continuing to learn, being able to continue to learn about our lives. I mean, this word, again, it does appear in our mind very often. And sometimes it means that we've actually kind of surrendered learning, surrendered understanding, because we prefer to know, to have something that is very fixed, very unchanging. And we can almost see that when we really have that sense of knowing, how often we kind of depart from the moment, that we depart from ourselves. You know, again, maybe you've seen that in relationship to another person, someone you have trouble with. You know, maybe someone offended you this morning. The next time you see them, what do you see? So often we see what is the image based on what has already gone by. And the word again appears. And in a way, in that image, the image in itself is disconnection. Because no one can be confined in an image. We cannot be described by an image. And that is so important to understand, because our images simply do not serve us well. When we disconnect, sometimes you can feel that happen. When we see an image of someone or feel that we have an image about ourselves, we start to withdraw our attention. We start to distance ourselves a little bit. And that withdrawal is often governed by fear. Sometimes it's created because of the intrusion of knowing. But often there is a sense of fear. There's a great mystic who once said that every concept grasped by the mind becomes an obstacle in the quest for freedom. That every concept grasped by the mind becomes an obstacle in the quest for freedom. And our images are really a concept. You know, the images we have of terrible, insensitive, wonderful, they're a concept. It doesn't, I'm not meaning to imply that none of these concepts or none of these judgments or none of these images should arise. Of course they do. The mind loves to know. But what's really important is what happens when they arise. You know, when our judgments do arise, when our images do arise, that moment of meeting them, of seeing them, that is what is really the most important moment. Because we can, in their arising, just consent to them, just agree to them, say, oh yes, absolutely, you know, of course you're a hopeless person, you know, of course I'm a hopeless person. Or we can question them. We can learn to let those concepts and those images just be like a little whisper in the mind that we see, and yet that don't become the source of disconnection, that are really recognized as a concept, and not, and there's a difference sometimes between a concept and what is true. And we can actually make that choice in our lives in every moment, that perhaps we can be more dedicated, more committed to understanding what is true than in preserving our concepts. Because then we begin to learn. Sometimes it's just interesting to reflect on why some of our judgments and why some of our images are actually so important to us. I mean, we know they're not that helpful. And yet, why do we kind of hold them so tightly? I think one of the reasons is that they do offer a kind of security. That our judgments and images offer us the security of knowing. And sometimes the security that is offered is that we really don't feel so much need to change in ourselves. That we don't feel so much need to change the way that we see. Take, for example, if I know somebody to be really an annoying person, really a frustrating, irritating person, and you know, I'm really sure of that. You know, that person, you know, like the whole world would agree, that person is irritating. If I feel really certain of that, I actually feel a lot better about being irritated and annoyed, don't I? I feel a lot better about it. It's fine for me to be irritated and annoyed because that person is really an irritating, annoying person. I can feel so secure in that kind of imagery that I may not actually feel the need to question whether it might be helpful for me to look within myself at the ways to cultivate perhaps more generosity of heart, more tolerance, more forgiveness, more patience. I may feel no need to engage in that questioning because I'm so certain that that person is just like this. So I don't make a new beginning in myself, and I don't make a new beginning with that person. Now, these images and concepts, of course, are not just about others. We can have very powerful images and concepts about ourselves, can't we? Oh, I'm inadequate, or I'm unlovable, or I'm worthless, you know, or I'm powerless, or I'm a failure. We can have all of these very buried images within ourselves. And when we feel confirmed in that identity, we actually may not feel very much longing or yearning for freedom. Even when those self-images are painful, they can still offer a kind of security. To really make a new beginning in our lives, to really know what a beginner's mind is, we're perhaps required to really see when our knowing is not the same as wisdom, but is in truth suffering, that exiles us from freedom. And it is also really not just a personal freedom I'm speaking about, but it is also really, the beginner's mind is also really finding that real generosity of heart, where we can free other people from the chains of our images and judgments. You know, if we think about some of the really historical feuds and alienations and separations between people in this world, how much they're perpetuated and sustained by the ways that we carefully guard and cherish our judgments and our knowing based on what has already gone by. The beginner's mind is not only the mind that is willing to connect, but actually I think it really holds this very powerful element of forgiveness. That the beginner's mind is also really a listening heart, a listening mind, that's willing to go a little bit beyond the borders of our conclusions and our images. You know, if you reflect upon it, this can be so subtle. You know, when you sit and listen to the sound of a dog barking this evening, you're actually not listening in the same way that you listened yesterday. The breath that you breathe is not the same breath that you breathed a moment ago. The thought that arises is not even arising in exactly the same moment that arose a moment ago. How much letting go is really about this moment-to-moment presence that allows us to be touched. There was a Chinese teacher who once said that there is great enlightenment when there is great wonder. Now, cultivating, this is a path, you know, this is not some sort of magical solution. Cultivating the beginner's mind, cultivating not knowing, really does ask us to be powerfully aware, to have a very powerful attention, to be powerfully connected to each moment, and to really see the ways in which new beginnings through awareness are actually always possible for us. And each time we make a new beginning, we really do have a glimpse of freedom. Now, those new beginnings are not a denial of history. They're not a denial of the wisdom that we have learned from history or from our stories. But they are actually a willingness to release ourselves from history. And maybe this is joy. Maybe this is joy. Maybe this is where we find within ourselves that real sense of possibility, of freedom, of traveling new pathways in our lives. You see that in your meditation, even in those small moments. You know, when you wake up from a dream, the possibility of making a new beginning or the possibility of being stuck in what has already gone by. And if you are stuck in what has already gone by, it is almost like saying, come the judgments, come the opinions, come the images. You know, I'm a terrible meditator, I'm a failure. Is this a choice you would actually make? We see this more and more deeply in our lives, some of these ancient disputes that we might have with another person. They really do begin to be healed in that moment that we are willing to begin anew. Some of the very ancient wounds and stories that we carry within ourselves, the beginning of their healing begins with our willingness to see anew. Just because something has a long history, it doesn't mean that it has an equally long future. This is the good news. It doesn't matter how old your images are, your judgments are, that just because something has a long history, it doesn't mean that it has a long future. And this is one of the great wonders we discover in practice. Beginning anew does involve, I think, a risk. It involves a little bit of a leap of faith. The willingness to really dive deeply into not knowing. But the alternative to that is to accept being chained to a past that we already know too well. And we are, of course, in making that leap into not knowing, we are asked always to let go of what has gone by, to let go of our judgments, to let go of our opinions, to let go of our images and our conclusions. And maybe this seems like a really hard thing to do. But in truth, holding and grasping to all of that is actually much harder on us. It is actually causes much more suffering. This is not just a good idea. You might try it for yourself. I mean, who do you think feels happier and freer? The woman and the man who walks around in their life carrying this ridiculous raft on their head wherever they go, bumping into things, falling over it, you know, burdened by it? Or the woman or the man who is able to put that down? Who's able to put it down? I don't want to be romantic about letting go. You know, it's not as if you somehow practice letting go, then you get really good at it, then you have one really big letting go and that's it, you know, and you're an expert. That's not the way it works. I think one of the really important things to appreciate about letting go is that we are always a beginner at it. That we are always at a beginner at it. And the right moment for it is really the only moment for it. It's the moment we are in. We need to look at what it means to put down what no longer serves us well. And we can try that for ourselves. And each time we try it, we're actually learning the difference between joy and sorrow. We're learning the difference between agitation and peace. We're learning the difference between calmness and conflict. This is something to apply in our practice. There's a mystic who once said, "Truly the only joy in this world is to begin." If we take just a couple of moments quietly together.